Welcome to the Appleseed, where we bring you and your family great stories from great storytellers. On today's episode, we'll hear from New Hampshire storyteller Simon Brooks.
But King Mark, like everybody else, had a secret, unlike anybody else.
And Philadelphia teller Charlotte Blake Alston.
Raccoon stretched out flat on his back like he was dead. He even coughed and sputtered to make it sound good.
I'm your host, Sam Payne, and today we've got stories that teach us a thing or two about trust. Who can you really count on? Let's see what our storytellers have to say about that. Here's Simon Brooks with a story called King Mark's Ears. We recorded it live in the Appleseed studio, and we're happy to bring it to you now. Here's Simon Brooks.
The story I'm going to tell you right now is a story from Wales. And in Wales, they don't have the letter K. They use the letters CH. So when you see this story written down, it looks like King Marsh, but it's not. It's King Mark. It's like Siobhan, right? Which is an Irish name, but it's S-I. How you get the S-H name, I don't know. It's one of those things, you know, these Celtic languages, they're very different. And so King Mark, he was a good king. And this is in the time of King Arthur. And we know this because King Mark used to breed pigs. And his pigs were said to be the best in the kingdom, and that King Arthur himself would buy his pigs from King Mark. And King Mark was a good ruler. He looked after his people. He treated them with respect. He treated the tallest person the same as the shortest person, the widest person the same as the thinnest person, the smartest person as the not-so-smartest person. He treated everyone equally, and his people loved him for that. But King Mark, like everybody else, had a secret, unlike anybody else. And there was only one person living that knew this secret, and it was his barber. And you might wonder, why would a barber know the secret? Well, you ladies should know when you go to the hairdressers, they tell you everything, right? You talk about everything, right? Well, this barber, he knew about King Mark's secret because it was pretty hard to hide from the barber. You see, King Mark had very large ears. Now, I'm not talking about King Charles's ears. I'm talking about huge ears, ones that were like long and thin and gray and furry on the outside and soft and velvety on the inside. They were the ears of a donkey that he had. Nobody knows why he had the ears of a donkey, but he did. And he would always look at Babak, his barber, and he'd say, "Never tell a living soul, for if you do, you will lose your head." And Babak liked his head quite a lot, and he certainly liked it on his shoulders where it was supposed to be. And so he never told a living soul. But secrets have a way of working inside you. They turn from a little tiny seed of a secret into a stone, and the stone grows until it's a rock, and then the rock turns into a boulder until you can't eat and you can't sleep and you get unhealthy and you get weak. And so he went to see the doctor. And the doctor, Scottish man, because all the best doctors back in those days were Scottish, he said, "Oh, you have a secret. All you need to do is tell me what the secret is, and you'll be fine." He said, No, I can't tell a living soul, because if I do, I'll lose my head, and I like my head. I want to keep it." "Oh, I got lots of secrets. I'll tell you what to do. Go and find a nice quiet place somewhere, dig a hole in the ground, and whisper it into the ground, or shout it into the ground, however you feel, and then bury it up. You wouldn't have told a living soul, but you would have told the secret, and you'll feel fine." And so Babbitt the barber paid his sixpence to the barber and said thank you, and off he went. A mile outside of the city walls, there was a big oxbow in the river. And in the center of the oxbow, there were these reeds that grew where the earth was still soft. And so he went to this place, and he carved a hole out in the soft earth next to the reeds. And he whispered, "King Mark's got donkey's ears." "King Mark's got donkey's ears." "King Mark's got donkey's ears. King Mark's got donkey's. King Mark's got donkey's ears." He felt so much better. He covered up the hole. All of that stress was gone from him. That big rock had dissipated somehow. And he went back. And life was good. But King Mark, every winter, would have a huge feast. And he would invite everyone in his kingdom to come and join the feast. This was a time where the people that were less well off could get well fed, that people that needed help could get help. He would find them work, or he would make them work so that they could pay for whatever they needed, right? And he would have these entertainers. There were fire jugglers, there were dancers, there were singers, there were storytellers. But his favorite musicians were like the key of the evening. And there was a gentleman who could play the whistle like nobody else in the whole kingdom could play it. His name was Enoch. Now, Enoch, some musicians, some performers, some people in public life, if you will, have very large egos. The kind of egos that makes their heads swell until they can't even get into a room without it banging on the door frame. You know what I'm talking about, right? You've met people with these huge egos. Well, Enoch was one of those musicians who had a huge ego. And whenever he went to perform somewhere, he always wanted to perform with the sun rising behind him or setting behind him, because he felt like, I know rock stars weren't invented back then, but he wanted to look like a rock star. And he was making his way to this feast, this festival that was being held that winter. And they were getting close, but the sun was still way too high in the sky. And so he and his musicians, they stopped in this little oxbow in the river, and they decided to practice. And the fiddle player, she took out a fiddle and started to play. And then the baron player, he got out his baron and started playing on his drum. And then Enoch reached into his pocket and pulled out his reed flute and blew a note in it. The reed flute was broken. It was split. And he said, what am I going to do? And the fiddler said, make another one. There are lots of reed bushes around here. Like, make another reed flute. And he's like, oh, okay. And so he cut a couple of reeds and he fashioned them into these whistles, into these flutes. And by now, it was wintertime, the sun was already setting and they needed to go. So before testing them out, he wrapped them up very carefully, put them in his jacket pocket, and they made their way to the castle. And the castle doors were flung open. Everybody was sat at these long, long tables. People were laughing and joking. There were some dancers dancing to a fiddle player. And when Enoch walked in with the sun setting behind him with his arms outstretched, King Mark saw him and said, Enoch, you are here. Come on up, come on up. And so he started to walk, chest puffed out, his head held high. A fiddle player took out a fiddle and started soaring away on that. The baron player got his drum and started dan-da-da-da-da, he started playing that. Enoch reached into his pocket, pulled out the flute and blew into it. And out of the flute came the words, King Mark's got donkey's ears. In a hall that had been filled with sound and noise, after that you could have heard a pin drop. And everyone turned and looked at Enoch. And the king said, what did you say? I didn't say anything. It was the flute. And he put it back up to his lips and blew again. King Mark's a donkey's ear. Bring that to me. So Enoch on his own, the musician stayed well behind him. Enoch went up to the king and handed him the flute. And the king put it up to his lips and blew through it. King Mark, whoosh, pff, you shall lose your head over this. Honestly, I don't know what it was. Why did you do this? Why have you made this magic whistle? I didn't. I swear I didn't. Oh, we were early. And he looked to the bands for corroboration. We were early and the sun was too high and I wanted to come in with the sun behind me. And we stopped at this oxbow in the river and I cut these reeds because my flute wasn't working. I made two more. I wasn't able to test them. There's another one. Yes, Your Majesty. Enoch reached into his pocket and handed it straight to the king, and the king placed it to his lips. King Mark! Babuk. He turned to the warriors. Bring me Babuk. Silence grew thick in the hall. People turned and looked at the barber that was sitting there, and he's shaking his head. The warriors came up and grabbed him by his shoulders and dragged him backwards through the crowd up to the king. He fell on his knees. Your Majesty, I swear I never told a living soul. I went to the doctor. He'll corroborate with you, tell you it's true. He said that I had a secret and I said I couldn't tell it to any living soul and I never told it to a living soul. The doctor, he told me to go to this place and I went to this place. It was in this oxbow of the river. There were some rushes and reeds and I just parted it and I shouted it. I swear I never told a living soul. And then someone in the crowd called out, King Mark, show us your ears. He turned around and looked. The hall was crowded with people. He didn't know who had called out. Then another voice called out, yeah, King Mark, show us your ears. And then another, until the whole place was, show us your ears, show us your ears. Well, there was nothing he could do. He took the crown off, set it down. He liked to cover his ears. Well, he had a do-rag on. He undid that and threw that down on the counter. And he shoved his fingers in behind his ears, and out they fell. These big, long, hairy green things with a soft, velvety inside. And people started to clap, and people started to cheer. And at first, King Mark didn't know what was going on. And then the penny dropped, and he knew that his people, the people that he loved and the people that he cared for, they felt the same way about him. They didn't care that he had the ears of a donkey. He could have had a nose 4 feet long with a pole on the end and a little wheel on the bottom to get around, and they would still have loved him because of who he was inside. And so Babak the barber was given a pension. Enoch was made the royal musician of the court. And King Mark had a new crown made with two holes for his ears, which he then wore proudly.
That was Simon Brooks with King Mark's ears. Listening to Simon's story brings back a memory for me about trusting people with secrets. My parents and I got along pretty well when I was a kid. I loved them, I knew they loved me, and we would talk a lot about books and TV shows, about building bookshelves and how to drive a car, and about history and religion, all sorts of stuff. But there were a few things that, for me, were off limits when it came to talking to my folks. Things I never, ever talked to them about. I never, ever talked about crushes with them, for example. My crush on Reese Healy in second grade, or Heather Parkinson in fourth grade, or Becky Williams in eighth grade, or Aaron Brown in ninth grade. Talk to my parents about any of that? Are you kidding me? I mean, I just thought my feelings for all those crushes were little kid feelings, and that my folks wouldn't be interested, or they might think I was silly. Like the character in Simon's story, sometimes I felt like I needed to tell somebody something or I'd burst. And like an idiot, I would sometimes tell my little brother. And you can imagine the things a little brother might do with information about his big brother's crushes. And then when I was in high school, I developed a crush on Julie Fish. She was smart and funny, and she had a beautiful singing voice. She was well-traveled and well-read, and man, did I like her. And one night, against all my better judgment, palms sweating, in a moment of weakness, I told my dad how I felt. You know what? My dad was great. He'd had crushes in high school, too, as it turns out. Who knew? And we talked for a long time. And he gave me advice that made every relationship I was ever in after that a little better. Since then, I've gone out on a limb and shared with my folks even bigger things as my life has unfolded. And I'm glad I have. I'm glad that even though I'm all grown up, they're still there to help me carry some of the things that might otherwise be secret burdens I'd have to carry myself. Well, that's where Simon's story took me. Where did the story take you? And who will you take along?
There's a lot coming up, but I want to take just a moment and tell you about another show from the BYU Radio family of podcasts. It's called The Lisa Show. Now, life can be stressful, but Lisa Valentine Clark, the host of The Lisa Show, along with her guests and her unique council of moms, provide a positive and empowering look at all kinds of challenges. They tackle them head on, sharing experiences, offering suggestions on how we can handle relationships and health and technology and body image and family, all kinds of stuff. And Lisa is a great person to hang out with. The Lisa Show, you can find it on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, all kinds of ways to listen to The Lisa Show whenever you like. The Lisa Show from BYU Radio.
It's a pleasure to be with you today on the Appleseed, and it's time now for our second story. Charlotte Blake Alston is going to share a story about how our elders often have the most trustworthy wisdom in a story called How Raccoon Got His Dinner, recorded live in the Appleseed studio. Here's Charlotte.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. This is my take on an old folktale that comes out of the area known as the Brussels Bottoms of Texas. There once lived in a very peaceful part of the woods a great big fat raccoon. Now, raccoon always managed to find the easiest way to get something without having to work too hard, and most of the time without having to work at all. Now, he'd been lying out this particular day out in the sun, even had his oldest child fanning flies off his face while he slept. But his stomach had just given him a little wake-up call, and whenever raccoon got that call, he answered. His stomach was yearning for what he loved best, and he loved nothing better than snacking on fat, juicy frogs. Green, bug-eyed, bumpy, fat, crooked, juicy frogs. He took them in all shapes and sizes. Now, there were plenty of other things in those woods that raccoon could eat, but there was nothing easier than catching frogs. All you had to do was just kind of go down to the pond, sit there for a little bit, and after a while, up would pop some little beady eyes and little bumpy heads and little lumpy backs, and he would just ease down towards the water's edge and reach out and snatch up as many as he wanted and eat them and, you know, take some home to his wife and kids, of course. Well, lately, there seemed to be something going on down at this pond, because after a whole day's worth of sitting for several days in a row, there wasn't a frog to be seen. So he was feeling a little anxious as he started to lumber through the woods towards that pond. Now, the pond was full of life, and more to the point, it was full of frogs. And there they were out there, you know, hopping, jumping, croaking, and, you know, bullfrogging. But they had had a meeting down below. They were sick and tired of this greedy frog snatch raccoon coming up and snatching up their relatives and friends, and they planned on putting a stop to it. So they decided that from now on, anytime they saw him coming near their pond, they were going to stay down below the surface of the water, and he could starve to death for all they cared. Well, they had a few little frogs that were the sentries, and they were looking out, and they'd look from one to the other and go, "Is it coming? Keep it looking." Now, as the raccoon got closer to the pond, he could hear all the splashing, and that got the best of him. He started walking faster, and then he started running. Sure enough, one of those sentries looked out and said, "Oh, better get below." And just as the raccoon reached that pond, bam, down they all went. Raccoon said, "Now, I know you're down there, because I heard you as I was running down here. Now, you know, hey, this is the cycle of life. You know, some get eaten, some do the eating. That's just the way it is. Now, you know, it's a hot day. Maybe they're just down in the mud trying to cool off. I'm going to come back when the sun has started to go down, when it's a little cooler." So he went back towards his home to wait for the sun to go down. He came back when it was a lot cooler, sat. Not a frog or an eye could be seen. So he decided to stay through the night, see if he could try his luck the next morning. But all through the night and early into the next day, that pond water stayed still. Well, by this time, the raccoon was so hungry and so frustrated that he just was so crying. "My man, come on. God, I love to eat me, my man." And off he went into the forest, filling it with his wails and his moans. Now, about the same time, Fox had just stepped out of his den to take his early morning stroll. Now, Fox was an easygoing fella, liked to take his time and reflect on things. Never bothered anyone. He was always in control. And as usual, he was impeccably dressed, even had his dog glasses on. Well, he hadn't gone very far before he heard coming from the opposite direction a loud wailing and a moaning. Fox flipped up his shades and caught sight of a pitiful but familiar form. Fox said, "Hey, hey, hey, my brother, you are distorting my solitude with all that noise. Now get yourself under, pull yourself together, and tell me what is going on." Well, the raccoon tried to get himself together and explain to the fox, "Well, you know, I mean, you can kind of consider me a fisherman. You know, I like to fish, but, you know, I fish for frogs. You know, and I go down to the pond, you know, I just sit there and I wait for a little bit to come up. I snatch them up, you know, but lately I've been going down to the pond, man, and I ain't caught nothing. My wife is on my case, and I just don't know what to do. I don't know what to do." Fox said, "Hey, here we go again with this food control thing. been trying to help you out for a long time, my brother. I keep laying down this knowledge. You just ain't picking it up. And this is the same thing. You are thinking with your stomach instead of with your mind. Now, I'm going to go back with you to this pond. We're going to take care of this problem once and for all. And when we get there to the water's edge, I want you to just play possum. I want you to just stretch out on your back like you was dead, okay? And let me take care of the rest. Well, Fox went with Raccoon and got to the water's edge. Just as the fox said, Raccoon stretched out flat on his back like he was dead. He even coughed and sputtered to make it sound good. Fox looked out over that pond and said, "Hey, frogs, this is Fox. I think you accomplished what you set out to do. You've been trying to starve this brother to death. I think, by gosh, you did it. Now, the least you can do is come over here on this land and bury this brother, because after all, this is my walking path, and stepping over dead bodies just ain't my thing." Now, I don't know what it was like when you were young, but when we were in adolescent and teen years, you're in a group, you can think of things that nobody would ever think of individually. And we had our elders who'd be watching us. We call them old heads. And they would often try to save us from ourselves. But we got, some old heads trying to get in our business. Well, there just happened to be some old hair frogs watching all this. And one of them said, "Seen that. Didn't do that. That's how I got to be old. Just because you see it, ain't got to do it. Don't say you never been told." Old hair frogs talking. He said he's dead. We're just going to go over there and check it out. Sure enough, frogs hopped out the water. One of them got a big stick, poked it at the raccoon. Raccoon didn't move. Poked him again. Raccoon didn't move. Frog said, "Yep, he's dead." And man, they started partying and bullfrogging right there on the bank. Fox said, hey, let's cut out the partying and the bullfrogging here. Let's get the shovels and let's get this on. Once again, one of those old head frogs said, "Seen that. Didn't do that. That's how I got to be old. Just because you see it, ain't got to do it. Don't say you never been told." Fox said, "No big deal." Frog said, "We're just going to bury him." So they started to dig out the sand from under that raccoon. And when they had dug a little hole, the frog looked up and said, "Is it deep enough?" Fox looked down and said, can you jump out?" Frogs took a leap. All of them leaped almost all the way back to the pond. Said, "Nope, not yet." They continued to dig out the sand as that raccoon sank down deeper into that hole. And they looked up and said, "Is it deep enough?" Fox said, "Hey, can you jump out?" Once again, that old head frog seen that. "Didn't do that. That's how I got to be old. Just because you see it, ain't got to do it. Don't say you never been told." Well, sure enough, they started to hop and jump and leap, but no matter what they did, they could not jump out of that hole. Fox looked down and said to the raccoon, "It's all yours, my brother." And he had as many frogs as he wanted to eat that day. Now, that's normally the way that story ends. But given my experience with old heads, the elders who saved us from ourselves, I like to think those old head frogs came to the rescue, jumped down all the way to the bottom of that pond, began to swim perpendicular, began to dig out and dig out and dig out and dig out and dig out the mud until they had reached that hole that had been dug, water rushed in, and the rest of those frogs were able to get away. And years later, some of those same frogs that had escaped that circumstance were now the old heads. They would watch those little young frogs and say, "Seen that, did that, almost didn't get to be old. Just because you see it, ain't got to do it. Don't say you've never been told."
Charlotte Blake Alston with "How Raccoon Got His Dinner." I can sure relate to those young frogs. Many times I feel like I've been saved from trouble by listening to the old heads in my life. How about you? Thanks to Simon Brooks and Charlotte Blake Alston for their stories. We hope you'll pass them along to the people you love. After all, at the Appleseed, we believe that sharing and listening to and learning from great stories can change your family's world.
The Appleseed is produced by Wendy Folsom,
Sam Payne,
and Brian Tanner.
Our audio engineers are Ashton Parkinson
and Carly Wilson.
The rest of the Appleseed team is Kelly Wehrmeister,
Trent Horton,
Evadane Hendricks,
Miriam Ayase,
and Tristan Schetzel.
A special thanks to the subscribers of our podcast who rate us or leave reviews.
You help people find the show.
We also love to receive emails at theappleseed@byu.edu.
Your thoughts and comments help us to shape the future of the Appleseed.
We're pleased and proud to be among the many podcasts produced by the BYU Radio family.
And you can find episodes of the Appleseed wherever podcasts are found, on the BYU Radio app or at byuradio.org/appleseed.
I'm Sam Payne, and the whole team can't wait to be with you again on the Appleseed.